And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman on this Monday afternoon. Well, joining us now is contributor Dan Ricker. He's been a guest on our program over many years. Ricker publishes the free weekly Watchdog Report online. Good to see you, Dan, as always.
Always a pleasure, Joe. Thank you very much.
I remember early on, many years ago, we were giving election coverage after the polls closed in 2000. We had some Palm Beach voters calling in saying they accidentally voted for the wrong candidate, and we didn't have any idea how big that would be with Chads and Supreme Court rulings. And
well, we didn't know what a butterfly
a president not being elected until mid-December.
Right. We didn't know what the butterfly. They kept saying, oh, we have a butterfly ballot. We're right. Like, we're in a studio.
Dan, tell us about the Watchdog Report. How did it come to be? You've had 14 years of publishing this weekly.
Right, and another three where I was just watching government. I started about 97. But it was, you know, a combination of events. I was telling you all earlier, there was a political consultant, Phil Hammersmith, who ran all the campaigns in the 90s for all the elected leaders and the state reps and the county commissioners. And I was outside of Miami City Hall one day looking for a candidate to run against long-serving Commissioner J.L. Plummer. And he walked up and he goes, little people, we're going to crush you. And I thought to myself, you know, there's a lot of things to say to me, but now I'm really getting determined. And then he subsequently died of a heart anomaly about 6 months later. And it was amazing. I had probably 8 or 10 people ask me, did I kill him? I said, no, I just told him it was going to be a tough political race.
What's the most difficult part of doing this job, besides not being very well compensated?
Yeah, well, it's also the fact that I'm a solo operation. And with that comes the fact that all the information coming in goes to one central point. And when you're using, originally 17 years ago, I was using my own money, and I said to someone, if you're private sector, you work hard. But when you're private sector and using your own money, you know, I used to say I have to be 2-3 times, you know, better than other people or the Herald or something like that. But also what happened was over the years, every day, I call Miami-Dade like a tapestry, and every day I get to fill in part of this gigantic tapestry. And, you know, suddenly people who are related I didn't know about, or, you know, you pick up things, information every single day. And over the years now, you know, I've become very formidable. I remember a lot of this stuff almost word for word if it's important.
So now it's a website and also it's an email weekly
right.
Mail. If people want to get a taste of that, it's free.
It's free. It's just watchdogreport.net or email me at publisher@watchdogreport.net.
So how are you funded? How are you funded now?
No, it's funded from a little grandmother that sends me $17.50 with a little note, thank you, you know, wish it was more, keep going, to the Knight Foundation, which is a $5,000 a year sponsor and supports part of my webpage activity. Thank you very much, Knight Foundation. But it's literally at the bottom of the report, you see the big sponsors that wanted to be listed. And it's I live off the community, and it's been a struggle, but somehow I've been able to survive.
Is there any conflict of interest possibilities there, some of those big?
Well, first of all, I list the companies or the people. Second, if there was a conflict, there's enough other news sources. I mean, I do pass stuff on to other people if I think I shouldn't do it or whatever. Or if I do something, the Baptist Hospital just had their community report come out, and I did a little couple paragraphs on the aggregate Baptist system. But I also had an editor's note saying, hey, in February of 2010, at 4 in the morning, some vascular surgeons, George Rabaza at Baptist, saved my life. So it's hard for me not to, you know, and whenever I see a Baptist personnel, I always say, thank you, Baptist, for saving my life, which to me was a big deal.
And with everything going on, how do you decide which meetings to cover? And
well, you know, Bonnie, over the years, I know which ones that are absolutely critical and which ones. A lot of times at the beginning, I would go to almost every single meeting, but I would wire myself in the sense that I'd get the emails of people on these boards. So if something happened in the future, a lot of times he would give me a heads up. Okay. Oh, it's time to come to South Florida workforce. You know, and all of a sudden I'll do a couple weeks of stories and whatever problem it was, it goes away or, you know, whatever.
So many of these meetings, the commissions and boards and that, are just a total snore. I don't know how you do it.
I tape everything, too, which allows me to roam and be, you know, sitting in the audience.
There's also coverage on TV.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, at home I have four tape machines. I can tape the school board, the county, the city of Miami, all simultaneously if they're doing something. But it's you get to know, you know, the school board audit committee. That was last week. I haven't missed one of those, excluding when I was sick, over like a 17-year period. Once I figured out what it was, I never left.
Tell us more about this hubbub that's going on with Miami-Dade County and how it differs from all the other Florida counties and the property appraiser's office setup. It has something to do because we're a home rule.
We are the only county in the state with home rule charter. So when voters, 75% in 08, approved creating property appraiser, an elected property appraiser, everyone assumed, and in fact, almost so did I, that it would be a constitutional office. Well, in fact, the county commission, using the home rule charter, made it what is known as a charter office. And it's not a department. It's separate. But it is a charter office versus a constitutional one, which has is very well defined in the Florida Constitution as far as what the duties are.
But it's still elected.
Yes, but it's still elected. But it's while we got an elected position, once again, it's different from the other 66 states or other 66 counties. And that's the issue. And people have been worried ever since that about a court challenge that it should, because the voters, you would think, I mean, you know, common sense would say everyone else in the state has a constitutional office. Why wouldn't we have it as well when they were voting for it? And it was overwhelmingly approved, 75%.
You think anyone knew? I mean, do you think everyone knew what they were voting for?
Well, yeah, I think they were voting for whatever all the other counties had, a constitutional.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Well, it's more nuanced because of the fact that we have this, quote, or home rule charter. But I don't think the voters got, you know, and that was the question. If you took it to court, you could, the opposing attorneys felt that there was a white paper that was given to me about a 4-page thing. But it was given to me while I walked down the sidewalk and someone slipped it to me. I mean, it was that kind of, you know, It was so hot. It's out there. And I think with Carlos Lopez Quintero, the current property appraiser, he's going to probably take it to court.
We're speaking with Dan Ricker. He's a journalist and publisher of the Independent Watchdog Report. If you have a question for him or a comment, the number to call is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, or you can email your questions to radio@WLRN.org, radio@WLRN.org. Oh, and Twitter, yes, is @topicalcurrents. You can tweet us.
Dan, in the promo we've been running over the weekend, we were talking about this business of the mayors of Hialeah and Miami Lakes, Carlos Hernandez and Michael Pizzi, proposing a boxing match between the two. In the wording, and I almost used the word pudgy, but I backed off and just used middle-aged. Right. And now it's evolved into a mixed martial arts bout.
I don't
charity.
Get it.
What?
I don't get it. I appreciate that it's for charity, but I think some of this stuff is... you know, it actually makes both Miami Lakes and Hialeah look a little silly. That they're, I mean, there's, you know, if they want to, you know, show how strong they are, who's the tougher of the two in today's world, you know, I say go to Iraq or go to Afghanistan and, you know, be a boot on the ground and really show. But, you know, it's just, I don't get it.
No, I read that this came about at Chula Steakhouse in Miami Lakes when they were having dinner. With the two mayors there having dinner together, I wonder if there were some sunshine law questions.
No, there wouldn't be. I mean, the two municipal mayors, there's no. They have separate responsibilities.
I see that Jackson Health System, I know you always cover this, it's financially solvent for the first time in 5 years. So what's going on, and does that bode well for the future?
Well,
or does it
first? No, it's been hemorrhaging $300 to $400 million over a 3-year period. But they also do $700-800 million in charity care. I mean, I tell people, put that delta in. They get about $200 million from the half-cent sales tax. There's another, what is known as maintenance of effort, which is another like $170 million. But my point is, Jackson is as a public hospital, is seeing this onslaught of charity care. So that's the big issue. They've downsized from 12,500 employees down to about 9,400. They've made major efficiencies and also are much better now at collecting actual collectibles. They used to carry $300-400 million in receivables. And they've also paid down some of what they owe vendors and stuff, so they're starting to get some good deals. They have a $50 million letter of credit that they, you know, kind of have as a cushion. But it's been a mighty, you know, task. I mean, it's people forget in government, most governments kind of a monopoly, the services they provide. You know, in Jackson's case, it's competing with Baptist. It's competing with Mount Sinai. You know, it's competing with all these other hospitals.
Right.
Their census is down, which is the next challenge is to really bring up their some of their patient population. But they're competing. And the health care with the Affordable Care Act coming is evolving and changing as we speak. And also you have the Florida legislature not wanting to participate in Medicaid.
Right.
So, I mean, it's – and they're having, you know, a strategy retreat. And you know, I've been to, I don't know, 25 strategy retreats over the years. And one of the biggest problems that Jackson has had is that – its leadership changes over and over and over time. And you also get a fair dose of Miami-Dade County Commission periodic involvement in the past, less so now. But, I mean, it's not an easy – yes, they're in the black, but it could change at any moment. And they still have a lot of infrastructure, about $900 million in infrastructure they need.
How will the Affordable Care Act affect them? How does that work?
Well, there's a thing called disproportionate share in the where federal money is drawn down in the past and divided up among the hospitals, the public hospitals in the state, of which Jackson is the biggest contributor, but also the biggest because we have to prime that federal money to come down, and they shoot over, say, $80 million to the state, and it becomes part of a bigger drawdown. But that's on a go away with the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, the theory being that everyone will be insured will use that money for other activities. But it's not – it's a moving target. You talk to, you know, Brian Keeley at Baptist. You talk to the head of Mount Sinai or whatever. It's this – the next few years are going – you know, the path is not quite that clear because we have the Affordable Care Act coming in, but we also have the states and – other places either giving it a miss or trying to modify it in different ways. It's not going to be an easy management issue.
If it's not repealed.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, the Supreme Court's ruled it's, you know.
Exactly.
Though 43% of the population doesn't realize that.
We're speaking to Dan Ricker. He's a journalist and publisher of the Independent Watchdog Report on today's Topical Currents. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And we return, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dan Ricker, and on that Topical Currents Facebook page, we'll have links to the Watchdog Report also. Tell me, Dan Ricker, besides the County Commission unanimously voting to grant the Florida Panthers hockey team a new scoreboard, what's interesting you in Broward?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
I try and make them.
Yeah, all right. No, I think... you know, how Superintendent Runcie is doing with the Broward, the school board. It's, you know, he came from Detroit, I think, to run the school, and or maybe Chicago. But he's, you know.
And there was a lot of controversy.
Yeah, there was controversy with
that,
the bus, so. You know, with the beginning of the year with the kids getting on the school buses. There's been a number of things. And it also, it's. The focus generally is on Miami-Dade County, which right now, in my opinion, as a school district, is unlike it's ever been since the 17 or 18 years I've been watching it. You've got an inspector general. You have a very aggressive audit department that has an audit committee that monitors that activity. And the superintendent, Alberto Cavallo, has put his name and reputation on the line. He's been there since 08. For the $1.2 billion school bond and technology renovation. And so it's up in Broward. I just think we went through more shocks and we happened to luck out. And I think they still have some challenges up there.
We have an emailer who wants to know if you know anything about personnel shakeups at Jackson, including the head of nursing.
No, that I don't. But they have a committee meeting on Thursday. I'll know by then.
Okay.
I read that in the healthcare sector, hiring in Miami-Dade and Broward dropped substantially last month. What are employment figures like in general?
Well, for the first time, healthcare has been such a growth industry. But also you have a situation where more and more companies and more people are trying to, do wellness. They're trying to, eat better and
right.
At Baptist, for example, their employees get like a handbook manual, which is it's an inspiring document. But it essentially explains, how medicine, how all these different things that about your life, and if you want to live a healthy life, what you need to do, et cetera, et cetera. And they've been doing that for 10, 15 years. So I think, while the baby boomers are coming in a big way, I think also we're saving some cost or lack of demand just because people are healthier
and living more healthily. Preventative,
right? I mean, that was the whole point of the Affordable Health Care Act, is that people would see not the ER where their aorta has ruptured,
right?
But they would see a primary care clinic where they got blood pressure medicine or whatever it was. So that they can mitigate it before it goes into, full medical issue.
And go ahead.
Take us through the Miami-Dade water and sewer upgrades that have been in the papers.
Right.
So much.
All 14,000 miles of pipe. It can go. That's enough to go to China. And there's 1,000 pump stations.
And some of them are 50, 60 years old.
Right. And the pipe that we put in the 70s, the bulk of it, is defective, and the company went out of business, whatever. But if you think about what was going on down here in South Florida, it was a boom time. Anyway, so we have a lot of defective pipe. We've got a lot of old pipe, and all the spills that people see around the Dade County is a symptom of that. But the feds have stepped in. They've the county's agreed to this federal consent decree. And it's about, in the short term, a $4.2 billion experience to upgrade these pipes and the wastewater treatment for the next 6 years. But when you extrapolate it out over a 20-year period, it's going to be about a $20 billion experience.
And who's going to be paying?
The consumers. It's going to be tagged on to your water bill, which is right now about $42 per month for the average household. It'll go to 45, and it will stay there for probably 5, 6, 7 years, and may go up or down. But that we've got to pay for this.
Did you say maybe go down?
No, unlikely. But it this is something that should have been addressed 20 years ago, and now we have this giant ticker, and everyone's shocked. But all through the 2000s, money, water and sewer revenues were considered and went into the general fund. And, was paying for other things, culture or whatever. But rather than going in and repairing the basic infrastructure, which was needed.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, that's easy enough. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Email radio at WLRN.org. And Twitter at Topical Currents.
That's it. Tell us the latest on the ex-Hialeah mayor, Julio Robaina.
And his wife. Yeah. No, I mean,
it's pretty confusing. Like, I don't really, I read.
Well, he was hit with tax evasion by the IRS, who are claiming that the mayor and his wife, the mayor says it was his wife who was doing the banking activity. They would loan out money. They did it to this one person who turned out to be a Ponzi schemer and was went to jail, I think, in 2010, and has worked with the Fed since then. And what he was doing was getting some of the payments on money lent at 36%, some of it was up to 36%. And, to me, that in itself is such a red flag. But he would get some of the repayment back in cash, and it looks like about $1 million of it wasn't reported.
So this is on the word of a Ponzi schemer, though, who
The Feds have gone through his bank accounts. Where the money, is it reported? Is it in the accounts? The one thing you don't need in your life, just a tip after, is to have an issue with the IRS. And when this kind of investigation goes on, they're very thorough. I mean, it's been going on for a couple of years. So it's amazing what they're, remember, this is how Al Capone got nailed.
They say they're innocent.
Well, I appreciate that. And it'll be interesting to see if they can pull it off.
Another Broward County issued completion of I-595 within 1 year of completion. They really have terrible tie-ups, and they're going to be adding expressway tolls on 595 and be able to change lane directions and all of that. There seems to be a lot more toll action going on in South Florida. I wonder how our listeners feel about that.
Well, even if you have SunPass and you want to pay. Not use it or whatever, as soon as you approach the toll, it's deducted. And the reason I was thinking about it is I didn't know what my balance was left on my SunPass, and I thought, I'll just, pay extra because I'm not on the freeways that much. But the guy goes, oh, no, I can't take your money. You have a SunPass. It's already been deducted, so we'll see. But you're right. No, the whole thing of...
Well, normally you have a credit card registered,
right,
and they'll deduct it from that.
That's assuming you have a credit card. Yeah. Anyway.
You live simply.
Huh?
You live simply.
I live simply, yes. Anyway, it's a way for them to generate more money. I mean, there's a real question down here with MDX. They're trying to raise the tolls, and they're slowly... That's coming back a bit. It's...
Well, 595 will be DOT, though.
Right. That's Department of – that's the state. But, again, it's still – the only thing you can say is at least now, while traffic's bad, the population growth is not what it used to be. I mean, it used to be a much higher rate. So maybe we can absorb some of the new traffic a little easier.
I take the toll lanes north on 995 every afternoon. I'm surprised that so many people pay the extra to take the toll lanes – and they go slower than the free lanes.
Oh, really?
So what are you doing in this lane?
Oh, you mean the individual drivers?
Yeah.
I don't find that.
Yeah.
I find they speed like crazy. We're speaking with Dan Ricker, publisher of the Independent Watchdog Report on today's topical currents. Another short break, and we'll be right back with you.
And we return 33 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's topical currents. We're joined by regular contributor, frequent contributor, Dan Ricker. Of course, he's the publisher of the free weekly Watchdog Report online. Our telephone number, we got some lines open. That's 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email radio@WLRN.org, and also at topical currents for Twitter. And we'll take first caller. We've got John in Miami. Hi there.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
The tolls, increasing tolls in the, across the whole area of South Miami is just really getting crazy. It seems like I'm seeing increased tolls along with increased numbers of the devices that, measure the toll every so often. So instead of a 10-mile stretch, there's used to be one, now there's two. So my question is, is there a data bank that where the public can see the general total number of tolls that of revenue that this this produces, because it has to be crazy. If I just look every day while I'm on the road thinking about how many cars are passing these gates, there's got to be a plethora of revenue there.
I don't know. I'm sure somewhere on either the state FDOT or the MDX or one of the, that they have a listing of what their toll revenues are. But I don't know if there's something, or, you know.
Well, during a rush hour, I-95 can be a couple of bucks per car, and it's bumper to bumper.
Right. No, but I mean, the numbers are there. I just don't know how to access it. I have never looked at it. I usually look at the financials when they hand them out at the meetings.
Yeah, sorry. I think that's the silent giant there that we probably need to look into.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So other than being billed as a femme fatale, who is this Anna Allegro, and what's her connection to former U.S. Representative David Rivera?
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, she's being claimed to have helped a candidate run against Joe Garcia, the current congressman now.
On the Democratic side,
even though she's a GOP political operative and called herself a Republican bad girl. But she was close to David Rivera, who was the opposing candidate and lost to Garcia this time. 2 years earlier, Rivera beat Garcia. But, I mean, she's now in Nicaragua after she failed to show up for a FBI U.S. attorney interview.
It was a deposition.
Well, it wasn't so much a deposition.
No?
I don't think she'd been under oath. But they wanted to talk to her. But she's been down there. New Times, Frank Alvarado, tracked her down. So did now Patricia Mossi for the Herald. Sorry, I don't mean to, you know, but she made the trip to Nicaragua and found it. And it's just part of this whole circus of, you know, we talked about the Balateros and some. It's just some of the shenanigans and strangeness of things that go on down here. That one, a congressman would perhaps, is being alleged, would try to, you know, sabotage his Democratic counterpart via a, you know, shadow Democratic candidate who's, you know, now in federal controls.
So she went to Nicaragua to avoid questions?
Well, apparently her family had some friends or something down there, but she says she'll come back any time. You know, they want to talk to her.
But they don't, they can't require that she
Well, I don't know. I have no idea. The feds don't talk about what they're doing. There's always no comment.
Mm.
Let's go to another caller. This is Ginger in Miami. Hi.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Thank you. Dan, this is Ginger. I see you all the time at City Hall when I'm there putting in my 2 cents.
Okay.
I was wondering if you would speak to the fact that the outdoor advertising industry keeps coming back again and again like a creature from the dead.
Right.
And they're coming this Thursday, in fact, before the commission once again, trying to get permission to put billboards and LED flashing advertisement all over the city. And also the payphones that are going in all over. Payphones, no one ever uses them anymore. They're just an excuse for ads.
Yeah, where are the payphones going?
They're going in all over the city, actually. I live in the Upper East Side, and I counted 10 payphones, two in front of the new Chase Bank.
Oh, my God.
And two in front of Wendy's on 79th Street, one on the side and one on the front. They're just an excuse for the ads that they're putting on there. Nobody even uses them. And, in fact, in the Upper East Side, they only were used for bad purposes in the past, which we've sort of gotten rid of.
Right.
And now these payphones
It was a way for drug dealers to be transparent.
Oh, exactly.
Right. I mean, that was hilarious.
I did see a homeless guy sleeping against one the other day, so... He was propped up. But, I mean, it's so disheartening to see all this. And the payphones are out of an advertising company in New York City. And they claim, oh, we had payphones there all along. But you know what? These are super-sized.
Right. Well, you know, you should be talking to Mark Sarnoff. Because I remember when he said about all these ads and stuff that it was eye pollution and
yeah,
all this other... And to be, you know, to be frank, I think he did reduce the number of billboards. But some of this other stuff, I mean, always remember when it comes to government, I don't care what level, state, federal, local, they're a crack addict when it comes to money. There's never enough. And this is obviously, you know, they're doing it for the revenues.
The visual pollution is incredible if they ever get away with all of it, and the distraction when you're driving, too.
I agree with you. I was driving Saturday night on Bird Road, and there was a billboard that kept flashing and changing like every however few seconds. It was very distracting and very dangerous.
I know that one. I've seen that one. I used to go to South Miami a lot. But there actually was an auditor's report. It said confidential on it, and, of course, somebody just gave it to me, so I read it. But it was by an auditor who suggested that the city allow as many payphones to be put in all over the city on the major right-of-ways, which isn't legal for the city to do, but how they get around it is they get FDOT to approve it. And then it comes back to them, and then they have to approve it. But these payphones, even though if they may have been there before, they were a pilot program back in 2001,
right.
And they were supposed to have a commission here to remove them. But before they could have that, all of a sudden these new ones cropped up. Like weeds overnight, to me it seemed like it. They'll
right.
say, oh, if you look at satellite pictures, they existed before. But remember how payphones used to be like little inobtrusive things,
right.
like on light poles
right.
and stuff? Well, these are standalone payphones, and if you go on any of these state roads, you'll see them. They're trying to put them all over all the city.
All right. Thanks for that.
Okay.
Okay. And we'll move along. This is Alan in Palm Shores.
Hello there. Listen. Dan Ricker provides an incredible, incredible service for everyone interested in good government. Plus, if I don't know what you call it, a blog, and if it is a blog,
it's a news service.
He identifies, he's not one of these people that let people trash others without giving their names. And I agree with that, but I have one bone to pick with Dan, and I'll listen off on the air. He does not cover disabled issues like the abuse of the tags, the parking, the Miami-Dade, the lawsuit I won against Miami Lakes, and other issues like that. But I love Dan. I love his paper. And I love
thank
his blog.
You, Alan.
And he has the right to cover what he wants.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Do you want to comment on that?
No, I actually have covered the disabilities meeting. And I think just yesterday they had a meeting. But it's hard for me to get, especially since the surgery. I mean, 8-10 years ago, I was much more mobile. I'm not as energized as I used to be, and so it's a little harder.
Maybe you should get some interns.
Yeah, but the problem is they don't
have
I can look
the
at
knowledge
some,
of the
yeah,
institutions.
I can, you know, I put 17 years of an overlay when I look at something.
So in your newsletter, you said Governor Rick Scott praised Port Miami's deep dredge project, which is moving into the construction phase. But we did a program on it. There still appears to be a lot of opposition, at least environmentally. Has anything
right.
come of that?
Well, no. The environmentalists are, and rightfully should be concerned, because there's a lot of mitigation of the reef and the ecological sensitivity of it. But it is going ahead. The Corps of Engineers had a little mix-up there. There was about a 6-7 week hiccup that delayed it. But now it's coming back. And they'll start, and I hope we have DERM, or I don't know what they're calling it now, but I'm sure everyone's on a monitor this very closely.
It's not called DERM anymore?
It's been collapsed into something else, I believe.
Oh, okay.
You know, in the reorganization down to 26 departments.
I see.
And one more call before we break. This is Pete in Miami. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon. Mr. Rickert, do you know do you have any information on the status of the bond issue with Miami Airport? From my source at the airport there, they're basically tapped out. They couldn't even issue a bond for 2 cents at this time.
No, go ahead. No,
all the construction. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the county's got about $17 billion aggregately in bonds, of which MIA is the largest singular component. It's about, they've floated, the total project, the due south and north terminal, $6.4 billion, up from the original 15, 20 years ago, what was it, maybe $1.6 billion when they first started.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, last time I looked when Jose Abreu was there, I think we were at 333 days. When it goes to 365, that meant the airport would have to make $1 million a day debt payment. And that was how I kind of looked at, you know what I mean, flagged it. But you're right. I mean, the trick is You have to lower, you can either keep increasing airline landing fees per passenger, which are already at like $19. You know, there's only, and that's why the concessions, it's really important for the MIA in the future to have major concession revenue coming in, perhaps that hotel, you know, airport city or whatever they're calling it. But you're right, it is tapped out, and we got to be, when I say we, the public and the county has to be very careful, because some of that, those bonds are what are known as double barrel, where the county actually, it's not just revenue coming from MIA that pays for it, but the county also acts as a backstop.
Well, meaning just, taxpayers.
You right, mentioned, which brings the taxpayers.
You mentioned the landing fees. I work for an airline, and I know that they came out, I believe it was in April, effective in April of this year, that they were lowering the landing fees per thousand.
Right.
Because of the revenue. So sometimes I wonder what goes on.
I think that was because they were also part of a deal to expand America's presence. There was something, I remember that when I was talking about it. It was reduced, but there was a reason for that. But look, MIA and the cruise, or in the Port of Miami, have got to be absolutely competitive and, you know, running like a fine clock, because they're so important to, you know, the 17 million tourists that come down here every year.
Well, that's true. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks for your call.
We're speaking to frequent contributor Dan Ricker. He's the publisher of the independent Watchdog Report. What's that website again?
Watchdogreport.net, or send an email to publisher@watchdogreport.net.
Okay, and it's Topical Currents. One more short break, and we'll be right back.
And Monday afternoon edition, Topical Currents, 48 minutes past 1 o'clock. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Dan Ricker. We have some time remaining and a couple of lines open if you'd like to get in. 1-800-743-WLRN. 1-800-743-9576. Dan, it's kind of old news, but let's recap the Dolphins and the stadium upgrade failure and the business in the legislature with the Speaker of the House, Weatherford, who overruled the rights of the citizens to vote on that referendum.
Well, it was, look, it was
probably wouldn't have passed.
It probably wouldn't have passed. And it was a contentious issue up in the House, where both it split the Miami-Dade delegation, with the bulk of the people, both Dems and Republicans, being against the deal. So there wasn't a real big push in the House side, especially, which is what Will Weatherford, you know, he is Speaker, controls. And it just, the owner of the Dolphins, Mr. Ross, said that, oh, he was promised and everything else. And then he trashed. There was actually two PR press releases after it went down, after the session ended on the Friday. And the first one was even a little more explosive as far as the press release from the Dolphins. And the second one was more toned down. But, I mean, you know, it is what it is, and they did still, you know, they submitted their plan for Super Bowl 15, 2015, and 2016, the 50th and the 51st, so
as
we'll
is.
See. As is, so we'll
Mark
see.
Mark Caputo wrote in the Herald about that the Dolphins really just were out of sorts in the legislature. They didn't know the way things worked, and they didn't feed enough egos. And
it's similar to what happened with gambling in Genting last year. They went up and, you know, thought they could just kind of, like, bring a lot of cash and hire a lot of lobbyists, and it would just, like, sail through. And, you know, the one thing about Tallahassee is, you know, at least be discreet.
Let's squeeze in some calls before we leave. This is Dave in Davie.
Hey, guys. I just had a question. I was wondering if our tax dollars were used to fund 595, and if so, how much money did our government spend on that? I'll take my answer.
I'm sure your tax dollars at the state and federal level were paying for it. I would go on that one. The Herald had a nice story on it today. I'd go on the webpage and just click it, because I'm not that familiar with the financing of that extension.
And also, we have Gino. He's in Miami. Gino.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was wondering, is there any kind of a movement, or is there a petition that's being circulated where we can talk about SunPass? Because they've got things going on with double billing. My wife went to the courts the other day, and she was thinking she was going to talk to the judge about it, and they didn't even want to talk. Just pay the fine. There's nothing else for you to say. And she was actually on my account. That was hers. On mine, she has been paying with automatic deduction, and they still sent me a bill for $250 for the same thing that that already came out of her account. Is there anything, any kind of movement, any kind of petition?
I've got an idea for you, Gino. I can't give you any answers on your specific case, but there is a website with a Miami-Dade organization. I think it's called Say No to Tolls.
Or
something like that. And they do have an online petition that you can sign. I spoke with the gentleman, but it's been over a year ago.
Right.
Yeah, I'd be willing to be a volunteer to stand outside the store and just get signatures, man, because something's got to be done about that. I really appreciate it, Joseph.
Okay,
thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Dan, what about this? So the governor sent draft letters to the presidents of 12 public universities in Florida, telling them to abandon efforts to institute tuition increases in the coming year. And you say that sets a dangerous precedent. Why?
Well, you know, first of all, the universities of Florida, the public universities, are supposed to be academically independent. They have their own governing boards. It's good government. It's transparency. It's like you don't want politicians deciding what is good art or what is good literature or whatever. And I did an editorial on this on Sunday, and my point was, you know, Governor Scott may have a point. I think a lot of people, he's trying to keep tuition down for Floridian students, which is, and parents. That said, he would have been better served, in my opinion, if he had written the letter directly to the chair of the trustees, the board of trustees, rather than go to the actual CEO and president of a university and try to put the squeeze on them at that level.
And do they have to follow?
No, I think they all rejected. I mean, it was sent as a draft, and it just said, sign here, you know, add, put the person's name. And it was, look, people forget, you know, Governor Scott is still learning on the job. I mean, his political acumen and it has not been that, you know, he came from the business world. Some of his stuff is from a political standpoint, kind of naive. And this is perhaps one of them.
And we've got a Coconut Grove caller. This is Gwen. Hi.
Hey, Dan.
Hi. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I had a question for you. If you had any information on what was going on with the Grand Avenue project, the Point Group, since the water moratorium and all that fun stuff?
You know, that I don't, though. I don't see anything happening in the short term because of that moratorium.
Do we know when the moratorium may end?
I don't.
No.
And
does that affect the Playhouse business?
No. This is a new structure. And it has to do with the water and sewer. This is all going to be part of the, you know, a pumping station, the upgrades and everything else. That's why, Gwen, I really don't know what the timetable's going to be on that. But
okay,
when
you find out, keep me posted because I read The Watchdog.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
All right.
Is there any news on the Playhouse?
No, not that I'm. I mean, it's just sitting there being broken into and slowly, you know, racking up some code violations.
Dan, I certainly want to congratulate you on 14 years, and I hope you can join us next year for number 15, God willing. Dan Ricker, also give us that website once again.
It's watchdogreport.net, or you can email me at publisher@watchdogreport.net.
And it's free.
One word, watchdogreport.net, and it's free.
I always look forward to it on Monday morning. I come in because I know it's fed on Sunday.
Sunday night at about 4 o'clock.
Yeah, very good.
All right, one more quick thing.
All right.
Mayor Regalado and Commissioner Suarez, who say, how low can they go? They're going out at the Spanish airwaves.
Right. There's all the Spanish talk shows and everything else. And, you know, you have the incumbent who was a former journalist and radio host himself, and you have the younger Suarez working the airwaves and, you know, taking pot shots. And I think as this thing, I mean, here we are only in May, as we ramp up between now and November. It's going to be fascinating. But a lot of it's going on outside of the English press. And that was kind of, I was trying to give some of my readers and friends, we need to keep an eye on this so that you don't have people saying one thing in English, one thing in Spanish.
Yeah, that's very common.
Right.
Common complaint. Certainly want to thank you, Dan Ricker, publisher of The Watchdog Report. As always, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Dan.
And thanks for listening this hour. Topical Currents is produced by Richard Ives. Technical direction from Caroline Brader Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. Want a friend to hear the program? We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. Also, find author and book links, discussion, and more at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program is with the nutrition team of Jason and Mira Calton, author of Rich Food, Poor Food. They have tips for smart and nutritional grocery shopping and how to avoid the mystery ingredients. And to the calendar, on this day in 1913, 100 years ago, the death of railroad and hotel magnate Henry Morrison Flagler in Palm Beach. In 1912, he triumphantly rode into Key West on his completed overseas railway marvel. And on this day in 1927, at exactly 7:52 a.m., 86 years ago, Charles Lindbergh takes off on his solo flight across the Atlantic in the Spirit of St. Louis. It took 33 and a half hours to reach Paris. Jimmy Stewart. One more while we remember the not ready for primetime players. On this day in 1989, 24 years ago, the death of comedian Gilda Radner at age 42 of ovarian cancer in Los Angeles. Husband Gene Wilder was by her side. And we leave with this thought from Gilda Radner, the first Saturday Night Live cast member selected. This from Roseanne, Rosanna Dana. Quote, "My uncle used to say, it's always something. If it's not one thing, it's something else." Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation.